Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the show. I am Bill Carnes, my co-host Dave Champion. Together, we are
totally unprepared.
I believe this is episode 29, I think, that we've got about 6 or 7 months in there.
Way more up on this than I am.
Well, you have to realize, man, when I put everything up on totallyunprepared.info, I label the name of it, it's episode 28, and then
okay.
The date, episode 29 and the date.
So, All right.
Yeah.
You're way more into this than I am. I just show up.
It's part of my extracurricular posting of everything. You do half of it, I do the other half.
That's true.
So today, Dave, we're going to talk about something that's in the news. It's been in the news for a while, but now it's the Iranian nuke deal between Iran and D.C.
The long-awaited
Yes,
deal.
Which seems like an amazing cluster, you know what,
yes, I do
of an affair. There are three Americans that we're aware of that are being held political captives in Iran. They failed to even get those guys out. It's just... It seems like an absolute mess and a key to the city, if you will, on doing some nuke stuff that we're going to be okay with.
I agree. First of all, this is going to sound weird and people are probably going to excoriate me yet again. I understand why if the Iranians refuse to incorporate the discussion of those American citizens in the nuke talks, I understand why America would let that go. When you're dealing with something strategic over the next 20 or 30 years, to screw that up and not pursue that because of this issue over here, it's a hard call. It's an emotional thing. But if the other side isn't going to negotiate about that, but they're going to negotiate about this, I think you got to go with what they offered. It's the same thing when Nixon decided to pursue China. They didn't get everything they wanted, but they saw this strategically it was the time to initiate the deal. You know, my view on this nuclear issue with Iran is perhaps a little bit different than other people's.
Imagine.
Hard to believe.
Imagine a unique point of view by Dave Champion.
A lot of people are looking at it in terms of bombs, blow people up. Bad, okay, very, very sort of, I don't want to say childish, rudimentary logic, okay? And believe me, I'm not saying that Obama has anything more than rudimentary logic, but remember there's a whole lot of people in the State Department, a whole lot of people in the White House, a whole lot of people in these private think tanks that are looking at these issues decades ahead. So here's where I see this comes down. And you've probably heard this phrase, that having nuclear weapons... You have a seat at the table, or you now are part of the club. Okay. I think Iran's point of view was there is no Middle Eastern Islamic country that's part of the club. And we want to be part of the club. I don't believe that to say we want to be a Middle Eastern Islamic country that's part of the club, we want in, means we want to blow people up. I think there's people are looking at it in a very emotional sense down here, but I think the decision makers in our government, the decision makers in the other 6 or 7 governments that participate in the talks, and the people who are negotiating for Iran, a lot of people imagine that because they're Islamic and because you hear a lot of crazy stuff from them about them in the press, some of it contrived, some of it true, that they're stupid and that they're barbaric. Okay? They may be barbaric by our standards and like their court system and how they mete out what they call justice. Okay? But they're not barbaric in the big broad scheme of things. They have an agenda. They're pursuing their agenda. A lot of the people who are in the Iranian government who have power and control were educated here in England and France at major universities. Despite the U.S. media portrayal, these are not out-of-control nutcases. Okay? That's the rhetoric you hear here in the West. Okay? So my thing is they know exactly where they're going, and they want a seat at the table. Is it going to shift the balance of power forever in the Middle East? It is. But what happened when Pakistan got nukes? That's an Islamic country with nukes. Okay. It shifted the balance of power. India has nukes. Okay. So every time we invite somebody into the club, it shifts the balance of power. The whole geopolitical picture shifts. And all the governments that have some play in that area of the world have to now reevaluate what the game plan is for the next 30 years. But unlike most people, there's a lot of rhetoric about once Iran gets the bomb, man, Israel is toast.
Yeah.
I don't believe
Israel has nukes.
Israel has nukes, right. And all these countries have nukes, and I'm hoping it's going to get to the point one day where they all realize, man, we've spent billions of dollars on these programs and these delivery systems and the bombs themselves and the computers. We've spent all these billions of dollars for something we can never use. I'm hoping they figure that out. And I believe that every country that's a part of the club has figured that out. Okay. And it's interesting when we look at the dynamics internationally and, you know, everybody's upset about this country having nukes or that country having nukes. There's only one country on the planet that has actually detonated nuclear weapons on another country's soil, and that's this country. And, you know, in the public school system, they teach that it saved a million lives because we didn't have to invade Japan. Well,
it cost a couple hundred thousand in Japan to save those a million lives.
Well, we didn't even do that. The truth is, if you're not in public getting information from the government in the public school system, the truth is Eisenhower told Truman, don't do it. He said there's no need. Japan is wobbling and about to go down based on resources. All we have to do is give it another month or so, and they are toast. We can just walk right in there. Okay? Eisenhower said there is no military reason to drop these bombs. Don't do it. And Truman did it anyway. So that was a political decision, not a military decision, despite what people are taught in the schools. And I know there's a lot of people right now screaming at the camera, that's not true! And they're screaming at the camera that way because 45 or 55 years ago, they were taught that in school. And they've always believed that, and because they've always believed what they were programmed from the government, then I'm the schmuck. But go do your research, find out what Eisenhower actually told Truman. You'll find out Eisenhower, who was the five-star general in charge of all that entire the World War II combat regimen, said, don't drop those bombs. So I look at Iran, and I understand they want to ticket into the club, and I do not ascribe to the emotionalism. Oh my God, they're going to decimate everyone. I don't believe it.
When I was worked for Department of Defense as a contractor, I learned a couple of things. There is delivery and dissemination, the two D's, the double D's, if you will. You can have whatever you want. You can have bio, you can have chem, you can have nuke. If you don't have an effective method to deliver,
sure,
and disseminate,
mm-hmm,
both those things combined, well, all three things combined, the bio, the chem, the nuke, whatever, one of those, mm-hmm, three, the delivery and the dissemination is worthless. One of the things we learned at the time was there are what we refer to in common chemical warfare terms, the United States is at what's called level three in the development of chemical warfare. Of course, there's treaties now involved. They have theorized level four and level five chemicals. Now, there was a briefing at some point in time after 9/11 to some of the best scientific minds in the United States dealing with bio and chem. And in this briefing, they were told that they had found level four and even one level five chemical that had only been theorized at that point that had been in the control of the Soviet Union after it fell, and then Russian hands had opened up, and within a couple of years they found that. Now, they had found these chemicals nearly 10 years prior to this briefing,
mm-hmm,
for the scientists that are supposed to be the leaders in this country. So that asks, where was the knowledge over the last 10 years? You're briefing it to what is supposed to be the best minds.
The experts.
The experts. I was in that briefing, and I asked a question. I was there from a tactical standpoint.
Okay. And I didn't know that you were a bio expert.
I was not. I was invited to that meeting with my clearance as a tactical expert.
Okay.
And so this meeting was more than a decade ago. I'm not divulging anything that is detailed within classification, blah, blah, blah. But I asked in there, my first question was, how long have you known about this? To which it had been about 10 years. And then my next question was, how long had these been in existence prior to your knowledge? And back the calendar up another 20 years.
Mm.
Okay. So we're talking, these things had been developed in the early 1970s. And now, in the early 2000s, 2003, 2004, 2005, whenever, I forget exactly when this briefing was, that is when these folks first found out about it. So, and then another thing we went into some of the bio-related things that different countries around the world have. And there was one particular evil country, as you might think, that we were told had some very evil bioweapons. And my question was, do they have an effective method of delivery or dissemination to the United States mainland or any of our, relatively close allies that would be in that region? And they asked me, why ask that? I said, well, I'm not afraid of a man with a gun who has no bullets, and I'm not afraid of a man who has bullets and no gun fired out of. You got to have both. So do they have, they possess these, according to our intel. The intel, who didn't know for 20 years and didn't deliver it for 30 years, that the old Soviet Union had these level 4 and 5 chemicals.
And sometimes the intel is not great.
Oh, no.
For instance, the only evidence that Iraq ever had any chemical weapons came from a Saudi chemical team getting a... No, I'm sorry. A Polish chemical team from the military.
Oh, there's the joke.
stating that they had their machines had sniffed something, and supposedly, allegedly, reporting that to their Saudi commander while they were driving around during the first Iraq war. Mm. Okay, that's the only solid evidence. But back to Iran for one second.
Well, let me just finish the story real quick. The answer that I got over this particular country and their biochemicals was, no, they have no effective method of delivery nor dissemination. I don't really care then.
Exactly. One last thought on Iran. I believe the reason that a deal was necessary, whether we like it or not, I think it had become pretty clear to everybody that Iran was going to get nuclear weapons one way or another. So the question, I think, really became, do we have them sort of as, I don't want to say, a rogue state with nuclear weapons and they're not part of the club? Or do we recognize they're going to get them by hook or by crook sooner or later, probably sooner than later? Let's have them come in and be a part of our club.
Sometimes you got to have a dork in the fraternity to run the books or what it might be. All right, folks, we'll be right back for the next episode right after this.
Oh, again, we are totally unprepared. We're shooting the breeze, and the engineer looks at me like, what the hell? Why aren't you going? All right, we are back, and it's time for... All right, what is up with some of this great technology? I am not going to rant about something. I'm going to tell you about something. Technology is... First of all, I think we can all agree that some of the technological advances that we've made in the last 10 years are astounding. But one of the things that's really interesting to me is that the old paradigms concerning media and communication, by that I mean communication from, say, the authority, what we've been perceived as authority figures, whether it was the media or the government, the communication out to the people, that's changing. And it's changing rather dramatically. And one of the things that I've been having some fun with that I wanted to tell you about is there is an app out now that you can just get and put on your phone called Periscope. And it is really, I think people don't understand how dramatically it's going to change how we consume information. By the way, I am on Periscope. Excuse me. If you would like to follow me on Periscope, all you have to do is get the app and then find me at Dave_Champion and just hit follow. Now let me explain to you how Periscope works and why I think it's going to revolutionize the way we get information. Previously, let's take a news agency. They could sit in a studio like Bill and I are right now, and they can talk to you. Or they had to have this big van, and the van had all this transmission equipment and audio gear, and they had a driver, and they had an engineer, and they had to have a cameraman, and they had to have the talent, and they would roll out to a scene, and there was big production, right? And all of that, excuse me, all of that was to allow you to watch something that was going on out on the street through the television station, okay? through your TV, using the station as a conduit. Well, that is all over now with this and Periscope. Periscope is a live streaming technology. In other words, you log on, you get set up to stream, it says, there's a big red bar, it says start broadcast, you tap that, and you do whatever it is you're going to do, and every single person that is following you gets to see and hear real time what you're saying and doing. So, for instance, when I go live on Periscope, anybody who's following me, presuming they've enabled notification, which they should if they're on Periscope, whenever somebody they're following goes live, their phone gives a little chirp and a little thing comes up and says, so-and-so just began to broadcast. You tap that and it takes you right there and you're watching live in real time what that person is doing. Now, like anything else, any other source of information, there, we can be overwhelmed. Bill, you probably remember when there was, like, I don't know, a couple of TV stations, a handful, and then we got cable, and then we got satellite. Now there's literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of places you can go to watch stuff, and virtually all of it is crap, and you wouldn't want to waste your time with it. But Periscope is nice because you get an opportunity to see what somebody's doing or a group of people are doing and decide whether you want to follow them. Now, there's everywhere from guys like me that are on Periscope to news agencies that are now using it. It's changing the paradigm for them as well. A reporter can now rush out with his phone, go on Periscope, and do a live broadcast without the van, without the engineer, without all of that. It is going to revolutionize how things are done. Now, I dig it because, as you probably know, Bill, what was it, 6, 8, 10 weeks ago, I canceled the Dave Champion show. And I did that because I didn't think that television and an hour-long show each week was really the best way to spread the message of liberty. I found that it takes not many people can sit for an hour each week and watch somebody talk about issues pertaining to liberty. We have very busy lives, and research shows that most people want to consume something that's 6 minutes or less interesting. So we become, you know, for years there's been this thing that we're the soundbite society, and that seems to be borne out now in the polls. So what I did was I canceled the TV show so that I could focus my attention on my new blog site, which is DaveChampionsLiberty.com. Now, you can go there and subscribe, and every time I post a blog video and article, you will get an email just telling you something new is there, and it'll give you a little description of what it is, and you can choose whether you want to go look at it. The videos, I'm trying to hold them to less than about 4.5 minutes, and there's a written article that accompanies it. So you can watch the video. If you want to know more, you can read the written article. Sometimes I will put a video up with a link to a highly detailed article I didn't write. So the video part, I'll give you the salient facts. And then if you want to go do in-depth research, you can click on the link that I've included, and that'll take you to a place where you can get even more information. Again, just like the Dave Champion show, it's all relevant to liberty. Each video clip begins with my saying, I'm here to talk to you about liberty, and closes with why it is important for us to talk about liberty. Bill, so what do you think about all this new technology and all the various ways we have to communicate these days?
Not a fan.
Not a fan.
Now, then again, I am overly inundated with everything. As a matter of fact, I am wanting to back so far down. I mean, I've got the fancy smartphone, but I got to tell you, in no time at all, I am switching to one of these, the little flip phone that has the QWERTY keyboard on it. That's exactly what I intend to go to from this. I don't want to have GPS on my phone. I don't want to be able to have my day, you know, as I'm driving, bling, Dave's got a new video. You know what? I'll get the email at some point, go on there and watch. That's me.
Yeah,
realize the majority of society, or at least a good segment of society, would love to, hey, bling, Dave's ranting on about something. I want to catch this right now.
Yeah.
Okay. It's like with the electronic voting system. Everybody likes the electronic voting system because we get results like that rather than have ballot system, which is much, it's much more negligible in the fraud that can happen, but it takes longer to get the results. It could take days to get the results. You know, you remember hanging Chads. I don't know who this Chad guy is, but evidently he hung for quite some time. Or he was well hung. I don't understand that whole Chad thing. Anyhow, so I think that the technology is kind of cool that it's out there, but I am one that am not only not going to partake, what I am partaking in will be getting scaled back in the very near future.
You know, it's funny you say that because I get the impression over the last several weeks that we've been talking that you are feeling overwhelmed by the amount of communication that's coming at you from various sources.
I am. Yeah. That's an excellent way to characterize it. I am absolutely overwhelmed with that. You know, I'm going to a seminar tomorrow, and in order to get to the seminar, I had to make a phone call and give them some information. I've had no less than 4 emails on it. I got a text message reminder. As a matter of fact, while you and I were at lunch, you remember my phone rang and I didn't take the call?
I do.
I didn't recognize the number. It was a live human being reminding me of this. You know what, guys? It's in my freaking calendar. And I told you I'd show up, so I'll show up. If I decide to sleep in tomorrow and not go to this seminar, then I'm not going to be there. But stop reminding me about it.
Yeah.
You know, the occasional reminder I do like, however, is like a dentist appointment or a doctor's appointment. Not that I like going to either of those, but that's a nice little reminder a day in advance. But
well, I'll tell you, you know, yeah. Those reminder things, you know.
But yeah, inundated by technology and messaging and all like that, I realize I have left a good portion of the personal interaction of the human race because of technology. And I see my children being affected like that too. I took a picture. I have 4 daughters. All of my daughters and my girlfriend were all sitting on the couch a few weeks ago. And everybody was glow facing here because the screen glows on your face. They're all glow faces. I took a picture of all of them sitting there in the same room. Nobody's saying a word to each other. Everybody could literally reach out and smack somebody else with a pillow.
Right.
But they're all just sitting there on their stupid phones.
I don't know if you've ever seen the meme that it gets put up on Facebook. It shows about 10 teenagers walking in a line, and they're all doing this right at their phones. And it says the zombie apocalypse has arrived.
Yes.
You know, and it's not what you thought it was going to be, but here it is. You know, part of it is for me is to manage technology. And that's one of the reasons I created DaveChampionsLiberty.com is in respect for people don't have an hour anymore. It's too much. It's that in and of itself is overwhelming. Yes.
Sure.
To have to sit for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can somebody sit for 4.5 minutes? Probably. If they want to know more, can they read an article? I don't know if they would, but they certainly can. What I'm doing on Periscope, most of these, you watched one of the Periscope things at lunch. What was it, 1.5 minutes?
You brought it up and was done. It went back down just like a Periscope. It was very good.
There you go. So what I'm trying to do as I'm communicating the message of liberty is I'm trying to, make it more conducive to be consumed. Oh, speaking of canceling Dave Champion's show, I got to tell you something funny. Just came to mind. You know, whenever something gets posted on KPVM's thing, Local Pahrump on Facebook, there's all these worldly worshipers who despise me, and they immediately start saying negative things. And it was so funny because one of them did this big, long rant about how KPVM and Vern Van Winkle threw the Dave Champion show off the station, that they waited until there was a certain amount of time after the election for a cooling off period so it didn't seem so obvious, and then Vern kicked me to the curb. You know, and I'm like, ask Vern. It's not a secret. I told him I wasn't interested in doing the show anymore. And you know, because you've been with me as I've been developing this Dave Champ, you know. And it's just amazing to me that, you know, this is one of the things that one of the aspects of liberty that I appreciate is to me, you can't have liberty if we're not forthright. If people lie, they deprive other people of making honest decisions. If I come to you with something, but I mischaracterize the set of facts to get you to, say, agree with me on something, that if I gave you the full facts, you would not agree with me, I'm depriving you of your freedom. I'm depriving you of your personhood, your autonomy to make your own decisions. And that's, you know, one of the things that's so enjoyable about, like, DaveChampionsLiberty.com is I get to put it out there. I have some guys who are like on some other thread someplace. I posted something and they go like, dude, I've never heard of you. Like, what's the deal? So I directed them to DaveChampionsLiberty.com and they come back on the thread like 20 minutes later. They're like, dude, that totally rocked. That was cool. So, you know, the important thing is to get the message out there. And I know you do that through, to the best of your ability, through your political activities as well.
I do, but also my extent in getting the message of liberty out there is a little bit more focused around the home, around town and such as that. I'm not looking at this on a national stage. I want it to be out there. I'm just not the messenger for it. I leave that up to you.
Fair enough.
Folks, we'll be back. Welcome back to this segment. Now it's time for my rant. You know what really grinds my gears? We were just talking about it in the last segment. A little bit of too much technology all the time, especially in the younger generation. You know, my kids didn't end up getting the fancy smartphones and the iPods and stuff like that till maybe a year or so ago. And I regret it a little bit because now they're fully consumed with all of that garbage. One of my daughters, she spends a little bit more time on an iPod, a fancy iPod that's interactive. And her phone is actually an old flip phone that I can rarely ever reach her on because if the battery dies on it, she might recharge it in a couple of weeks. I usually have to send her a Facebook message to get her to respond to me. But just all too often, there's too much going on around people where they're not paying attention to what's happening in life, in 3D, in real time, in your own personal environment, in this immediate area, because you're so focused on the stupid pocket computer, which, by the way, is a very interesting device. As it turns out, this right here, this phone, has more computer power, more computing power, than the Apollo space missions did. Imagine that. The whole spacecraft, get all the way to the moon, land, take off, come back, land in the water, and get rescued. A smartphone has more computing power than all of that. And you know what else it has? It has tracking ability. It has all kinds of microphone ability. It has all kinds of different ability. And stuff that I don't care for. You know, it's interesting. I have an app on my smartphone that's a flashlight so that the flashlight, the flash that comes on when you take a picture, you can just turn it on. If I otherwise am in a dark place or I need to use a light, I can turn it on. Well, I recently put a high security app on my phone. And in there, it evaluates all of the various apps that are already on there, whether they're from the factory or things that you downloaded. And it tells you which apps that you downloaded have access to which features within your phone, such as contacts, phone number, whether it's multimedia things such as that. I tell you what was really interesting. That flashlight app that I had put on there had access to virtually everything on my phone, including messages, email accounts, contacts, Facebook, your YouTube account. It could read all of that and send it back. I immediately deleted it, found one that didn't have any of those accesses and put it on. I actually liked the app a little bit better. And of course, we have found out recently in the last few weeks that Uber, if you have that app on your phone, when Uber is active, it has the ability to read all of your contacts, your email addresses, and all that good stuff. You know why? Marketing information, partly. And then if any government agency wants to find out what Uber's got, well, then they get all the information on all their clients as well. If any government agency wants to know what's going on with you, they don't have to get a court order to go find out what's going on your phone through your phone or iPod or other device, iPad, whatever it might be. They just need to go to these various organizations such as Google or Uber or of this flashlight app and look around and see what they've got going on. They'll give the information freely in most cases. I don't like any of that. That's why I'm going to be going back to a flip phone. It'll have one of those old QWERTY keyboards, QRTY, whatever, QWRTY?
QWERTY.
QWERTY. Thank you, Dave. Keyboards that does basic text messaging, 140 characters. I will be going back to that soon enough. I have to get a few things handled in life. And I got to tell you, I got to thank my big brother. I have a brother, big brother Mike. My brother Mike has worked pretty diligently, I don't want to say hard, but diligently over the last decade or so, to eliminate drama and BS from his life. Now, he lives in the city. He's got a smartphone, wife, daughter, couple of cats, dog, whatever he's got going on, right? Just typical, living the American dream. Got a job, does well, his wife works from home, she does great, just all this good stuff going on. And he really doesn't have a lot of BS in his life because he's eliminated it. Now, I've allowed myself through technology to be inundated with other people's issues. Somebody added me to a new Facebook group a couple of days ago. I don't know how that happens. But now I get all these Facebook messages because this is the newest thing, this particular group, Save America, one person at a time or whatever it is, something like that. And now I get inundated with all of these ridiculous messages. Oh, there's a new post on. Oh, there's another new post. Oh, there's another new post. And a lot of these posts contradict each other. The page hasn't worked out. I don't want to be part of that. I got more stuff going on. I don't want a bunch of emails. I sent an email out to several people in my address book saying, look, if you have something that you believe is so important that I need to get, that you would print it out, fold it up, stick it in an envelope, address it, put a postmark on it, stuff it in the mailbox, you think it's so important that I should read that, then go ahead and forward it to me on email. But please slow down all the other stuff, because I get too much of it from some people. I do. And luckily, my inbox has slowed down a little bit. I don't like having to be responsible and totally responsive to this stupid device that sits in my pocket. It's a leash that everybody can get a hold of, everybody can have a part of it, and anybody can track it, anybody can know what's on there if they have the right technology. I'm sick of it. I really am. I know a lot of other people are too. And I actually applaud those out there in the audience who have not gone into the realm of technology. I've talked to people who have said, usually older folks, we're talking 60s and above. I don't own a computer, I don't have an email address, and I don't have a cell phone. Or all I have is a very basic cell phone. Well, I intend to go back to that. I really do. Matter of fact, Dave, I got to tell you, one of my dreams is to be in a more secluded environment and a place I can call my own that is off the grid, and all I have is that basic flip phone. I know you are in a different place with that. But I got to tell you, that's one of my goals.
Oh, and I appreciate that. I'll give you an example. You know, there's Facebook, and then they, what, about a year ago broke off, and there's Facebook Messenger, which is a separate app on a mobile device. And you, when you get messages on Facebook on your desktop, it's actually a feature of this message program that Facebook runs. And I recently had somebody put on my Facebook page, You don't get messages? So I went and I looked at my Facebook Messenger, and this person has sent me a couple messages, which didn't seem to require a response. It's like, you're giving me a piece of information. Cool, got it. Move on. Now, a lot of people use Facebook very socially. They've got, you know, their 13 family members and, you know, 50 other people. And, you know, because of the show, the Dave Champion show and this show, you know, I have in excess of 1,200 Facebook friends. And then we've got the email from the old Dave Champion show. We've got email now at davechampionsliberty.com. And what happens is, and then I've got my personal emails, it is absolutely impossible to respond to every single person who might want to communicate. So I get it. And there's a lot of times people write me back and, you know, did you get my email? Did you get my message? Yeah, and? Unless you're asking me a specific question, I'm not likely to respond. It's just time management. And it's not that I don't experience what you experience, that sense of overwhelmingness. It's just sort of, what's that thing from Belushi and Aykroyd? With the tattoos on the hands, the movie.
Blues Brothers?
There you go. Thank you.
How could you not think of Blues Brothers,
dude,
man?
I'm,
that's like Casablanca or Smokey and the Bandit.
I'm terrible with movie names. But, you know, it's like from the Blues Brothers.
We're on a mission from God,
right? I got things to do. You know, my mission is to try and reinvigorate liberty in the hearts and minds of the American people. So, and that's been my mission for 20 years. So, and I wish I was more successful at it, but it is what it is.
You know, along that line, I sometimes will get emails like that. And I have learned the people that I can just read it and I don't need to respond to. But I've learned the few people that need to know that I've read their email. So when I do, I'll send back, thanks, Bill. Two words.
I do that on text messages.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they know that I received it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's funny. My girlfriend will send me a response sometime, just the letter K, which you can't put an O in front of, just K, which K is actually the first letter of her middle name. So oftentimes I'll respond back to her with T because that's the first initial of my middle name, K-T. Yeah, it's just, K. I don't know what it is. Just the letter K kind of grinds my gears. Just put an O in, okay, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I know that I should get over it. I mean, of all the things in life that can bother me or that I could blow off, that is pretty low on the scale.
Oh, well, but, this is like when people do the abbreviations, like they don't write out Y-O-U, they just put U.
Yeah, R-U, like, oh, I see.
Yeah.
Oh.
You know.
Oh, you are you?
I don't get bent out of shape about it.
I call that phonetic silence.
But I never do it.
Yeah.
When I write in, you know, the Queen's English and, you know.
Well, you might remember, Dave, sometime last year, maybe in the fall, I had this very strange post on my Facebook page. And it really just rambled on. It didn't really say much. But what I did was I picked up my phone. And it gives you the three options. And I logged on to Facebook, and I have this thing that it gives you three different words that you can choose from without actually typing in. And it guesses where you're going with it.
Oh, yes. Predictive
words, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So I actually put an entire post on there, two paragraphs worth in one post, by just selecting the different words. And it went on there, and people are like, what are you talking about? What is this? So then it was a few hours later, I put on there, that was all done by the selective words off my cell phone.
So you let the predictive program
actually make, yeah, I decided which of the three it was going to go, but the post was completely from there. So, and it was one of those fun things. I'm sitting there, you know, people get, there are certain people that follow me pretty closely on Facebook, and I can tell based on the responses I get, and other people that are Facebook friends or friends for me. I got friends I haven't seen since I was in junior high that we are friends with. And occasionally you see something from them, but oftentimes not. But, you know, you can get regular stuff. If I post something gun-related, I can count, you know, I know who's going to be responding or liking that.
Speaking of gun-related,
yeah,
we talked about trying to manage. You talked about somebody who puts you in a group on Facebook.
Yeah.
The two groups I never accept offers for, and if somebody puts me in a group, I immediately go there and take myself out of the group. Firearms and politics. Because people just, blah, they just vomit onto those things. And like you say, it's in your feed all the time.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, on one of these new pages somebody put me on, there was this long article, had to be 3,000 words, why the FBI was choosing 9mm over 40 or 45, and on and on and on and on. And I just put a simple post that was thousands of words on saying, it's not caliber, it's shot placement.
Yeah.
And of course, you have everybody's pontifical, you know, I want to try this particular round in a Glock 26. Does anybody have any actual experience with it? It's like,
well, you know, I created that closed group for tactics that you're part of.
Yes.
Because I didn't want to hear from everybody and all their amateur opinions. If you're professional, I want to hear from you.
Yeah.
If not,
yeah. And that's where we get it.
And we'll be back right after these words. All right, we are back. This is segment four, where we talk about things that you want to talk about. Of course, that's provided it's things that we want to talk about, too. You can send us your emails at daveandbillshow@gmail.com. Also, Bill, your...
totallyunprepared.info. You can go
there.
That's
the one, yeah.
And see all of our shows. You can also, if you just want to do the audio, so you drive plenty or you're out jogging or, you know...
Yeah.
Have insomnia and want to go to sleep, bam, right there.
And, of course, Facebook, if you're a Facebook guy. Somebody sent us an interesting email that dealt with, most of you will probably remember the incident in Waco, Texas. Was it probably 6-7 weeks ago now?
Yeah, something like
that. Okay. Where there was hundreds of bikers at this one particular eatery, and there ended up being some sort of mass problem, which then involved shooting, and 9 people were killed, and hundreds were arrested. And interestingly, although I haven't heard any explanation for it, but then I haven't really investigated it, it seemed odd. Quite a number of well-armed Waco Police officers were already there before the problems jumped off. A lot of question marks about
that. Well, I had looked into it. There had been some incidents leading up to that one biker organization starting to, like, get in on the turf of another, and this restaurant was one and not the other, then a third come in. So this was something that didn't just happen. It was building and building, and the cops were aware of it.
Okay. Yeah. So this whole thing goes down, and of course now they've impaneled a grand jury to decide of the hundreds of people who got arrested, who's actually going to be indicted for a criminal offense and who's not. The focus of the email was the fact that a 26-year veteran, still currently employed with the Waco Police Department, is on the grand jury and has been, in fact, he is
the foreman.
The foreman, thank you.
He's a detective.
Of the grand jury, yeah, a detective of 26 years. Now, my concept is that when a person puts on a badge, they do not surrender all their rights. They can sit on a grand jury. But there should not be a conflict of interest. And I think it's very, very realistic to say the Waco Police Department is part of the prosecutorial team concerning these indictments. So, and when someone in the media asked this detective, did you have a role in the whole shootout thing and that case? He said, not really.
Yeah, the answer should be yes or no.
Right. If the answer is not no, either it's no, I had nothing to do with it, in which case, arguably, you can sit on the grand jury. Yes, you cannot sit on the grand jury because you have information of bias that grand jurors should not have before the evidence is presented. And not really is a very ambiguous answer. And if there's, remember, the rights of citizens who are innocent until proven guilty, the rights of citizens are at stake here. So to allow somebody to sit on the grand jury who's part of the prosecutorial team, who when asked if he had an active role in this, says, well, not really, no bueno.
See, my look at it is a little bit different. We've both been in the policing industry before. Formerly, McGill, jackass. I look at it as police should not be able to sit on a jury while they're cops. That's my feeling. And the reason is, at least not in the jurisdiction in which they serve. If they are, then perhaps it would be like if you are a county sheriff or a city cop, and this is a case involving, say, the state highway patrol or something like that, or it's the county guys and versus the city.
Or maybe it's a federal grand jury that's got nothing to do with your local police.
Exactly. So it shouldn't be allowed to be, if it's a jury of any kind that involves any sort of a case within your same department.
So you're saying either grand or petite.
Right.
Okay.
It should not be allowed if it has anything to do with your department. That's my feeling on it.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. That's why I say argue. If he said no, I had nothing to do with it. That's why I said arguably he should be allowed to sit, because I certainly understand he's still part of the agency. And what's to prevent him at work? Let's say I'm him, and you're a fellow detective who absolutely is working on that case. What's to stop him from, dude, let's have a beer after work, man. I got some stuff I want to ask you.
What about just in briefing and the information comes out? I mean, Waco Police Department can only be just so big.
Right.
You ever been to Waco, Texas?
I have not.
I have several times. It ain't very big.
Okay.
Okay? I mean.
So you're probably figuring it's like a 100-man department?
Maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe. So if this guy's a detective, he's been there for a long time, obviously he's got some seniority, he's got to know what's going on. He might even be approving cases and approving information. There's still briefings. There's still discussion on the phones. And I doubt this guy has his own little soundproof office that he works in and has a beeline in and out to his car. You know, there's no way to keep that separated out. So I believe that any sort of cop that's ever on any kind of a jury of any magnitude at all should not be allowed to sit where the case has anything stemming or dealing with their particular department.
Sure. And let's add to that the fact, local experience, Nye County Sheriff's, roughly 100 sworn officers. Okay. And it is not unusual for a deputy who has absolutely nothing to do with what's going on over here to be fully aware of all the relevant facts that take place here. His job is over here. He's got nothing officially to do with that. But when you talk to him, he knows 100% of the scoop or 90% of the scoop on what happened over here, which is not his turf.
Yeah, it's happening under one roof.
It is.
And, you know, I mean, cops love to talk to each other.
They do.
They love to. You know, in more cases than not, the best friend that a cop has is another cop. And the group of folks that they hang out with are all kinds of cops.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, that's one thing. I didn't fit in all that socially when I was on Las Vegas Metro because I knew that. I had some friends that were cops already, and they were friends with each other. And, you know, I was kind of one of the odd men out. I knew several cops, having not been a cop, but I had friends that were cops. And I realized how jaded some of these guys were. You know, it's like, look, they wake up, they eat, sleep, live, and breathe cop. All they do is they talk shop. They only, they encounter oftentimes the lesser, level of society, if you will, like some of the scuzzier people in society, criminals. They're dealing with bad guys often enough. And then when this guy and this guy and this guy and this guy all deal with different crappy elements of society, then they get together and they talk about that. Then they go home and they're on the phone, they talk about it. They go to the bar, they talk about it. They go out fishing or jet skiing, they talk about it. It's all 24/7 bad guy. And it gives you a very, very skewed view of society.
And I bet you made a conscious decision not to engage in
Absolutely.
That.
And I was on a squad out of the old Southwest Area Command that doesn't exist anymore. But I was on a squad there, and it was a younger squad. And these guys, they got together all the time. As a matter of fact, one of the guys on the squad was the younger brother of the sergeant of the squad. Seemed really odd to me that that went on, but it did. And these guys, they had a softball team. They were hanging out all the time. I went out to Lake Mead with my buddy that we'd been friends since, I think, seventh grade is when we became friends. We met in sixth grade. We had a slight little physical scuffle, a little bit of a fist fight. That's how we met. The next year, we became best friends. And I was a best man at his wedding in this era. And we just recently reconnected a few months ago. We hadn't talked in a few years. But anyhow, we went out jet skiing. As it turns out, he goes, yeah, some other guys are going to show up. As it turns out, some of the other guys that were showing up were guys on the squad that I worked on that I never wanted to hang out with because these guys were jackasses, right? They were just jackasses. But they had their own little sewing circle. They wanted to, you know, talk shop and, you know, cop this. And I, you know, I had a reasonably decent day that day. I mean, it was a Monday out at the lake. Nobody was there. Beautiful weather was nice. But, you know, some of the guys who were there were just jackasses. And I did have a conscious decision not to want to fall into that. I've always had more friends than I've needed. And I sure as hell didn't need a bunch of jackass cops in my social group when I found out that they were jackasses.
I was very lucky because, you know, I had a business background beforehand. So I had personal friends. I lived in the same place for years, you know, the same general geographic area within...
Yeah, you and I both.
Within 45 minutes of where I was born. And so I had old friends. I had a lot of friends in corporate America, in independent business community. So, yeah, you know, the whole hang out with cops, all the thing, very mundane. Let's talk about for a moment before time runs out. Remember Eric Garner?
Yes, this was the guy in New York on Staten Island, if I remember right. Big dude, right?
Big, yeah, like 6'4", 340 pounds.
Yeah, this guy was not an offensive lineman. He was the offensive line. This was a big, big man. And yeah, he was selling cigarettes on the
I think they call them Lucy's in New York.
Yeah, yeah.
One cigarette at a time.
Yeah, onesie, twosie.
Thus depriving the state of New York and the city of New York of pennies per cigarette?
Yeah, which actually for them it might be dollars. I think a pack of cigarettes in New York's like $12 or something.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, I don't smoke.
And it's all tax money. But yeah, so they went after him, choked him out, he died.
Yeah. And you and I have talked about this back when this was a hot political topic. And you know my point of view that a lot of times the reason that people die, like Garner, is because when they exhibit human traits like, man, leave me alone. The cops are like, right now I have to overcome this. I don't know, these guys on a time criteria, like if they don't get it done in the next 37 seconds, they're going to lose part of their paycheck. So instead of working with somebody and talking with them and finding a solution, instead of that, it's violence. The person says, very human, we know a guy who did this, who a cop said something and he said, hang on a second, man, and he ended up getting shot.
Yep.
Okay. So Garner exhibited a very human reaction. Man, just leave me alone. I watched the videotape. He wasn't physically threatening them. He was just like, leave me alone, man. Very human sentiment. And they killed him for it. They killed him for some bucks in tax dollars. And the question is, how wise, penny wise and pound foolish? They are very upset because they lost a couple of bucks in revenue because he was selling these Lucy's. And the city of New York, as of yesterday, now agreed to pay $5.9 million to his family, which tells you that the city of New York knew if they went to trial, they were going to be absolutely bagged and tagged on this. And it was going to be a lot more than $6 million in the end.
I would like to find out what the city of New York's tax revenue is on cigarettes and find out how many cigarette taxes need to be collected to pay that $5.9 million. And that's over and above the investigation cost, which is probably a couple million dollars on top of that. So they're probably into this at least $8 or $9 million. I want to know how many cigarettes have to be sold to repay that.
Yeah. And in addition to all that, a guy is dead that didn't need to be dead.
Absolutely not.
We'll see you next week. Thanks for being here.